Welcome back to the 193rd episode of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we love to explore the glories of rating game, but we often dive into the plateaus, and sometimes below that, the pits of despair. I want to thank our queen level supporters on Patreon Chess Journeys, Tim Everett, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donna Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Pearson, Tobias Rice, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich Bradley, Fenner, Fletcher, Ray, Nathan Pearson, Christian Glaw, Andrew Rimmer, Travel Mocha, Mohammed Ibrahim, Bruce Campbell, Ian Mason, Adam, Will P, Kenny Gray, Matthew Siebert, and King level supporter, Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, a great way to do it is fill out the Google form. I check it regularly, looking for guests. Now, if you're interested in getting better at chess, Noel Studer has his next level training programs. He has his newest course, the Simplified Chess Improvement System. This is a great course. I suggest you check it out. There is a code in the show notes to get you a discount. Also, my Chessable course is out, the Chess Journeys Tactics Workbook, Turning Knowledge into Skill. The reviews have been really good. The course comes with a money-back guarantee. So if you haven't tried it yet, I recommend it. We also have a sponsor for the show, Chessnut. They make a variety of cool electronic chess sets. They were gracious enough to send me a Chessnut Pro. I love it. I've been using it regularly. I tried again at least like one rapid or longer game a week on it. I've even played some blitz on it. It has been a lot of fun. I'm really excited for it. And you can use the code Kevin Skull to get a discount cheaper than anything else. And there, again, there's a link in the show notes for that. Okay, so we got something a little bit different today. The guest is actually me. I'm just doing a one person show today. Some of the things I plan to cover today are why I came back to chess after 20 years away, what keeps me going despite numerous setbacks, am I enjoying this comeback, what am I liking about chess. I'm going to talk about some resources, I'm going to talk about some Patreon questions, and I'm going to review a few resources. So let's get to it. All right, so let's start with this one. I played chess 20 years ago. I went from 1,000 to 1,700 in 2 years. And the reason I quit is this. I was disappointed with my improvement. I thought it should be faster than that. I thought after 2 years, I should be better. I had a bad tournament. And I was like, that's it. I'm out. Looking back on that, of course, that is madness. That is an incredibly fast improvement. And I wish I could have done that this time around. So the question then is, if I quit once already out of frustration, why come back? Did I think it would be easier? No, I did not think it would be easier. But I did have some outlandish initial goals. I was like, I gained 700 points in 2 years. It's not that unreasonable to think I could gain another 700 in, say, 5 to 10 years. So my initial goals were like, I'm going to become IM. So that was one of the reasons to come back. But really, I was just looking for a challenge in my life. It was during COVID. I just remembered thinking how fun it was, especially when I saw Queen's Gambit and I saw that first tournament scene. And I was like, oh, I remember that. That was really fun. I should try that. Thankfully, as I got farther into my journey, when I realized IM was probably not a very reasonable goal for me, I mean, it might happen. Who knows? Anything's possible. Instead of quitting this time around, I was able to be, I'm at a different place in my life, right? I'm more mature now. I've seen the world. I've seen failures more now that, you know, I'm a much older person. And so I was able to scale back my goals, right? So then it was like, well, you know, if I could just hit National Master, that would be great. And then we could start thinking beyond that. And then the more setbacks and problems I've had, the lower those goals have become. At this point, my goal is 1800. That would be great. And I don't really focus on it either. As I've had more experience with weirdness and chess ratings, my real goal is just get better and to feel better about my chess. And I kind of assume that if I do that, 1800 will come. I was knocking on the door of 1800 already. So just really get better. That is my goal. And eventually, I mean, I probably have to change that goal to get worse at a slower pace as I get older. And I'm aware of that, right? My goals are much different than they were in my early 20s, where it was kind of like world champ or bust, which is really ridiculous. As someone who was playing chess, I should have known better than that, of course. Okay. So it's also, there's been a lot of interesting disappointment with this comeback. Like I've had these moments where I jump up 100 points and then I drop like 90 points. And it's been a very interesting process, and that I've really had to think about, like, remembering those goals, right? The goal isn't just to hit some number. It's not just to hit IM or something like that. It's really enjoying the process of chess, of playing chess, of studying chess, of improving at something. It kind of feels like scaling the unscalable mountain, right? You know you're not getting to the top. So the question is, like, how high can I get? You know, how much can I enjoy that experience? But there has been a lot of disappointment. One of the things that really keeps me going is, there's a couple things. I guess one would be the podcast. Having a podcast every week that I'm really enjoying doing, that I'm enjoying talking to different guests, that keeps me going in chess, right? That makes me think, okay, I should keep at this, because I can't have a podcast about chess improvement if I don't play chess. Like, what's the point at that point? I wouldn't even want to do that. And another thing that keeps me going is, even when the ratings dropping, I still feel like I'm getting better, right? I'm learning things. I'm improving my game. I can see myself getting better. And then even when, say, my USCF rating, which is the holy grail of ratings for me, is going down, oftentimes it's accompanied by other things going up. Say my puzzle rating is going up, or my rapid rating is going up. It's rare that I find everything collapsing together. It feels to me very much that something is getting better. And also, I've really enjoyed the local community here in Los Angeles. It's I just can't recommend enough finding a local community. It doesn't have, like, I'm so lucky. I have two places I can play a weekly rated chess game at a long time control. But even if you can't find it, even if all you can find is a coffee shop with two other people at it, just having people to talk about and engage with, it's just a lot of fun. And I think it really keeps me going. And I think anyone out there, will help you as well. So really, just to come circle back to this, disappointment has been a big part of this journey. And I think if you haven't had that yet, you probably have. But if you haven't, brace yourself. Like, it's coming, right? Disappointment is just a part of this. So a question that I've been wrestling with is, am I happy that I came back to chess after 20 years away? Because chess is a very big opportunity cost, right? Meaning that if you choose to really go deep into chess, you are giving up other things, right? And probably things you'll be more successful at. Chess is the cruelest use of my time that I have ever experienced in my life. Normally, if I invest a third of what I've invested in chess improvement, I would be very good, right? I would probably be one of the top 2 to 3 people locally at that thing. I would be competing at a national level. I've done this with a number of things, most of them being card games. It's very fun. It's very rewarding to win most of the time, to be like nationally recognized as good at that thing. And when you play chess, it's kind of the opposite, right? Like, you are a nobody outside of your local area. You will probably not be great at it. And even if you get quite good, you're still just nowhere near the best, and you almost always feel bad about yourself and your performances unless you're able to truly cherish those positive moments. A call back to last week with Trenton is something he says really sticking with me, that it's like, when we win, we often don't give ourselves credit because we often win because our opponent blundered. That's how chess works, especially at, you know, like the undermaster level. And then when we lose, it's our fault. So it's like, it's really hard to find joy out of actual tournament performance, right? So for me, I'm really trying to celebrate when I'm doing well. And yes, it is often my opponent's blundering, but I'm trying to say, well, that's how chess works. Okay, but overall, I am pretty happy I came back to chess despite the opportunity cost. I've really enjoyed it. I've met a lot of people locally that I've liked hanging out with. I've enjoyed going to the big events. It's a nice experience to be able to go to these events, to really dial in. It's just really been enjoyable. So specifically, some of the things I've been liking about chess now are, one, I think the biggest one for me is chess tournaments are kind of meditation time, right? I turn off my phone. no one bothers me. My family knows that if they text me, I won't be able to respond. It's not my fault. I just can't. I'm not even allowed to. It's just a very freeing experience that I don't get in most of my life, especially as a teacher. I'm sort of always on, right? As a teacher and a parent, I'm always on and like responsible for responding to other people. And then even when I'm not doing that, my phone's buzzing. Like if I'm trying to play a rapid game, it's buzzing off the time. I don't know if you might have seen me playing my Road to 2200 series, and the phone's buzzing, and I'm checking it sometimes because it's my family. If it's another person, I won't check it. But you know, if a close family member is texting me during the game, I feel compelled to check it, even though I'm in a game. So I really, really liked that about chess. Again, I've liked the challenge. It's been really fun knowing that I probably will never master this thing, but I'm still getting better. Like the depth of this game is kind of unbelievable. And I've been really, really enjoying that. I really liked the wins. I won my game tonight. It's why I'm so perky right now. Like if I had lost, I might not have even recorded this and this is something I'm trying to work on, is that my mood is very dictated by my wins. Like I'll come to school tomorrow and everyone will know Kevin has won his chess game. It's not that when I lose, I come in and I'm like the worst person, but I'm just not as perky and happy. It's just kind of fascinating how much it can affect my mood. I'm also really enjoying that my daughter enjoys chess and we can talk about it. And I have someone in my life that I'm very close to that we can, share our experiences in chess. It's been quite fun. Today, I had a very traumatic moment. I was playing my game. I got up to walk around. I walked by my daughter's board just as her opponent has forked her king and queen with his knight and then slams his knight down on the board to take her queen. I was like, oh no, I'd have to see that. So she was playing someone much better than her. It's fine. But it was just a funny moment. But that has been a lot of fun. Also, what I'm liking is it kind of makes me feel like I'm back in the PhD program, right? That was a really fun part of my life where I was just learning and learning new concepts and sharing them with people, bouncing ideas off people. That was a fun part of my life. And in many ways, chess study feels like being back in academics, right? Like you're going deep into this niche topic that nobody cares about, just like my dissertation. Like if I try to call my mom and talk to her about my chess improvement journey, she's going to be like, what are we doing right now? Why are we talking about this? I do not understand. So I don't know. There's a lot of things that I have been liking about coming back to chess and what I'm up to. So that's been a lot of fun. I do want to reflect on what I change about the last 2 years in my chess journey. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And I've realized that I have this interesting problem with my study where I either am doing too many different things simultaneously or not enough different things. And so what I mean by this is, say 2 years ago, I was juggling like 8 books, doing puzzles, doing calculation, doing rook end games, looking at like Karpov's game collection, reading like 3 strategy books. And everyone around me is like, what are you doing? That is not how you get better at chess. And I was like, okay, all right, this next year, I'm going to be super responsible. I have lost to too many simple tactics. I'm going to stop doing that. And so I decided to really focus on not like puzzle rush tactics, but not really deep calculation, like that middle ground of like spotting tactics, basic and advanced, and really trying to root out those basic problems. And until yesterday, I was like, let's put up the mission accomplished banner. I think I've done it. I've kind of rooted this out. And then yesterday, I just hung a bishop. Just hung a bishop to a horrible move against somebody much lower rated than me. And for 2 hours, I just had to try to be resilient and hope that they would make the mistake. They finally did as they were trying to go in for the checkmate. I was able to get a draw out of it, but it was a very horrible moment where I was like, oh my, maybe I haven't even rooted out those tactical problems. But the point is, in hyper-focusing on that, I sort of cut out too much other stuff. I feel like I haven't had as much development in my strategy side of chess Like when I was reading Karpov's game collections, it really was giving me new ideas that I hadn't seen before. I feel like I need to bring that back. And then the most important issue, and people comment on this all the time in the Road to 2200 video, which I love, by the way. Those comments are so useful to me, where someone is like, hey, man, I figured out your problem. You don't calculate deeply enough and you don't calculate well enough. And all I can say about that is, yeah, that makes sense, right? That's not what I'm studying, right? If I'm studying basic tactics and I kind of cut out the deep calculation, of course it's not going to go as well. So I have started bringing that back into the rotation a couple days a week, which is good, but it's definitely something that I would have changed about the last year. I think it is a good idea to really focus on raising your floor, focusing on doing easy tactics. I think that's great. But I think cutting out the deeper thinking of calculation is a mistake, right? And for different rating levels, that would look different, right? So what I might consider a calculation puzzle, a master would be like, no, that's my easy tactic. So everything scales. But my point is, I was not pushing myself. So my visualization seems worse. My calculation seems a little worse. And that part is quite frustrating. And now I'm rectifying it. But I feel like I lost a year of advancement there. Okay. So I want to talk about some recent resources that I've been using. I feel like I've been turned on to some cool stuff. One is, I've recognized that, and I've known this for 3 years, that I'm not good with knights. Okay. I'm just not. I can't see all of their moves fast enough, right? And it's not that I fall into basic forks, but it's more like knight goes here, knight goes there, knight goes there to try to capture this pawn. I can't just instantly go, it's going to go, it takes three moves like this route. I'm just kind of calculating, like, I think you go, no, that doesn't work. So I found a couple places. One is called the speedknightchallenge.com. It's a very basic game, but it's quite good. It's like, it just puts a pawn on the board and says, go capture it. And then it tells you how many moves you wasted in the process, and you only have so much time. So you're trying to, like, build up faster visualization of the knight. I really enjoyed that. Another recent resource, you know, the last 6 months or so, I got this electronic board, the Chestnut Pro. And for me personally, it's been really wonderful. Being able to fire up over the board games more frequently is just really great. If what you're looking to do, or at least what I'm looking to do, is improve my over the board rating. To be honest, if I only cared about online ratings, I would not get one. I would just focus on playing online. But the fact that I'm really calling my USCF over the board rating my real rating, that has been really helpful for me just to get more games. And my Road to 2200 series, that has been a really great resource that I hadn't thought about. I thought I was making it for the community, for viewers, but really I'm realizing I've made it for viewers to tell me where my flaws are. It's like having a couple hundred coaches of different rating levels constantly seeing your games and putting together the dots that I haven't been able to put together as easily, where maybe I can say that's a one-off mistake. Viewers are like, that is not a one-off mistake. I've seen you make this 12 times. A thing people have pointed out is they'll often say, like, that's a weird move. I don't understand that move. And then instead of really trying to understand it, I brush it off as maybe a mistake. And then there's a reason why I didn't understand it, because it's a very good move that I don't understand. So I've actually been trying hard, especially in longer time control games, to never accept that's a weird move. I have to find at least like two reasons for that move. Maybe it is a weird move, but people make moves for a reason, right? Even if they're unusual moves. It has been a hard series, though. I lost a lot of games in a row. I was going through some stuff with my health, and I have fixed that. And so now I feel like I'm kind of underrated, which is funny, and I've been winning a lot of games. So if you haven't been with the series lately, win streak. We'll just say that. We'll say we got a big win streak going on. Another resource that's helped me a lot, is going to sound weird, is making a Chessable course. I've heard like Sam Shanklin talk about this, that he chooses to write books about things he wants to learn about. And boy, that has really been great for me. My Chessable course is on the more basic side. But remember, I said in the last year, I was really trying to work on simpler tactics and seeing them all. And that's what this course is really about. And it has helped me quite a bit. Even just last night, there was an unfortunate diagonal situation that I almost missed. And then the course idea just boom, popped in my head. And I was like, oh my goodness, there's an unfortunate diagonal. And it just, it's amazing how trying to help other people improve at something helps you improve at it. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, if there's something you're really struggling with, even if you're not going to like sell a Chessable course, I've seen people make free Lee Chess studies that they post. Something like that, I think, can be incredibly helpful. Even if you're a lower rated person, I mean, remember, I'm not that high rated for a Chessable course. But let's say you're like 1200 and you're like, no one cares what I think about this. They do. Like, the people lower rated than you might be able to find something really useful out of what you're doing. So I don't know. I felt like it's been quite useful. It's actually been fun to see the feedback. I got to admit, you know, like, I was definitely worried that people would be like, why did you make a Chessable course? You're not even good at chess. This course is pointless and terrible. But the reviews have been quite good. So I've been excited about that. I'm actually just going to take a moment and read one. I've been so happy that this has actually worked out. Let's see. This person says, Bayzoner. I truly love this course. When I study other things, I like to use both Feynman method and mnemonic method. The course uses both of these techniques in excellent way. But the most important thing for me was how much I enjoyed going through this course. Many times I catch myself laughing from Sneaky Knight catching Master of Puppets. Because of that, one of the puppet get lost and we can pick it up for free. I don't even know what that means. I caught the one more puzzle syndrome. I'll be very happy if the author in the future will make another volume of this course with new funny stories, because this course is one of the best chess adventure books I've ever read. Okay. I mean, I wasn't intending this to be a chess adventure book. So, but basically the feedback has been really good and it makes me feel good. So, you know, I highly recommend doing something like this to improve that thing that you're like, oh, I just want to improve upon this. Another resource that I really have been using is 100 Tactical Patterns You Must Know. I know I've talked about this on the podcast. I talked about Ben Johnson's podcast, but I have a strategy for you that I came up with. I think the book kind of has some problems, right? But you get to craft your own version of the book on Chessable. At first, I started trying to like take the positions and make my own course. And I realized, what am I doing? I will just solve one position from each of the patterns. And then when I'm doing my repetition, I'm sculpting what I want it to quiz me on. So I've gone ahead and kind of sculpted my own course. So far, I'm about 30 positions in. I'm choosing one model from each type and then just drilling that one. So I highly recommend this approach. It's worked really well for me. I imagine it will work well for you. And again, you can do this with any Chessable course. If a course seems overwhelming, hit restart on the course and just do the parts you want to drill, right? You can still go into the course and look at it. If you just don't solve it, it won't put it on your review feature. So it's a piece of Chessable that I hadn't really thought about, and I've really started diving into it. Okay. Let's get to some Patreon questions that I've gotten recently. Sherrod from Patreon says, he wants to know, how have I shared chess with my daughter? I think a lot of people have children. They would love to have their children be interested in chess. So how did I go about doing that? And my main answer is, I let my kids pick their own activities and I let them decide how much they want to put into them. Now I offer them opportunities, right? So I taught my daughter several times. I think I taught her when she was two, when she was like four, and then again when she was six. And when she was six, she sort of showed reciprocal interest and kind of got into it. And one of the things I did was not crush her repeatedly, right? Like, we didn't play many games against each other. We've probably only played like four actual games. We have played against each other. Like, we'll play with me being blindfold and she wins every time. She is much better playing with a board than I am with blindfold. We've played some really wild time control differences where I had 10 seconds for the game with a 5-second delay. which is what our club uses as a 5-second delay. And so it's kind of training me to be able to play those end games when I'm out of time just on the delay. And she got 55 minutes for her game, and she was able to win some of those and lose some of those. And we study together. Like, we like to look at Paul Morphy games, and we have a saying, like, when Paul Morphy's opponents make a mistake, what does he do? He crushes them. And so we try to do fun things like that. And I just try to be supportive of what she wants. So there was a period where I was really encouraging her to do some puzzles. She was hanging a lot of pieces. So I had her working with Polgar's Learn Chess the Right Way, the defensive book, number 3. But in kind of like, I did this like battle pass thing. If you know Fortnite or other video games, they'll have these battle passes. So I would have all these fun milestones. Like, if you do 100 puzzles, you get to sit in dad's seat at TV time. And she was like, yes, you don't get your spot. And I set up other ones. Eventually, I stopped doing that because I wanted to really let her define how much she was going to play. And to be honest, she doesn't play a lot outside of her once a week tournament games. And that's how she enjoys chess. I wouldn't enjoy chess like that because I would feel like my improvement isn't as fast as I want. But that's how she enjoys it. And I let her just kind of do her own approach. Okay. Bradley Fender wants to know what I think about 100 tactical patterns you must know and how it compares to chess tactics from scratch. I think both books are amazing. They are my two primary recommendations for tactical resources once you've gotten past sort of the basics of like learning all of the tactical motifs. You should start by just, you know, things like Everybody's First Chess Workbook, learning pins, forks, skewers, all those kind of things. And once you have them all down, you've done a bunch of puzzles, 100 tactical patterns you must know is great for categorizing some of the more advanced tactical maneuvers. And then Chess Tactics from Scratch is just a wonderful book teaching you how to create tactics. That's what's so valuable about that book. It's not the different motifs that it goes through, it's that it tells you how to set them up, right? So whenever I play a game, and I try to do this on my Road to 2200 series, I'll point out, like, I see this fork in the position. Can I make it happen right now? No, not at all. Not even close. But I'm filing away. If I could lure a piece to this square, the knight could go here, and then it would fork. And that all comes from Chess Tactics from Scratch. It's really about the building blocks to figure out a way to build up to tactics. All right. Anthony Beckman wants to know, is it challenging to talk through your thought process while playing rapid games in your Road to 2200 video series? The answer is yes and no. It is challenging because I feel compelled to convey the information in a way that my brain doesn't do it. So you'll see this, and I've got some criticism about this, of every now and then I just start going takes, because that's how my brain processes. My brain does not process with the coordinates. I have to force myself to use the coordinates. I also don't use arrows when I play because I'm primarily interested in over the board play. So I'm forcing myself to do that as well. So it's adding layers of challenge for myself when I play. But, you know, in addition to that, I have streamed for years. I am a teacher, so I'm used to conveying information. That's not the challenge. The challenge is if I could just play chess and talk about it in the way my brain thinks, it would be much easier. But I feel compelled to add clarity to it. That's the teacher in me going, you can't just spend 30 minutes going takes, and not giving anything more than that, right? Your viewers will not be interested in that approach. Okay, let's talk about some resources. So some of my personal favorites, I already mentioned the two tactics books, but a couple other ones are Think Like a Super GM. I don't think I've talked about this too much on the podcast. I love this book. This is such a great calculation book. It's a little bit challenging, but it's not too challenging. I think anyone over, say, like 1400 can do it. I highly recommend it as your calculation work. The reason is because even when you fail and you miss it, you get to see how people of different ratings level think, And I think that's just so critical. Like, let's say you're 1400. Are you going to be able to copy Michael Adams, the Grandmaster's thinking style? Probably not, right? You might get a tidbit, a nugget out of that. But maybe it's more like how the 1800 thought about the position, especially if they got it right, right? It's like, ooh, I didn't think about the position in that way. That's a cool idea that I can actually reach up and grab. And so I have found it to be a really enlightening book. And I have to give credit, like in the last part of my Chessable course, the last 10 problems are copying that approach, right? I'm taking guests of the podcast and asking them to solve more challenging problems and going through what their process was like. So that is a fantastic book that I recommend. Another great book is, I believe it's called Evaluate Like a Grandmaster by Nate Solon and Eugene Perelstein. It's a really cool, different puzzle book. Like, this book is really about evaluation, right? In this position, how are you evaluating it? What is the move you would make here? It's not necessarily like an immediate win. It's not forking a piece quite often. It's maybe it's a pawn push that really cements your position, and it's asking you to really practice evaluation, which I think is something that a lot of people don't do and aren't quite as good at. I know myself included. Going through that book was incredibly useful to try to start getting better at providing continual evaluations of a position, and especially calculating with an evaluation. Oftentimes when I calculate it, it goes something like this. Moves. That looks pretty good, right? That's not a really great comparison method. If you're going to do two moves and one you say, that looks pretty good, and the other one you're like, I don't know about that. You're probably going to do the one that says, ooh, that looks pretty good. But it's much more helpful to be like, I believe that is a +2 advantage for me, and the other one is zeros. That is a more helpful way to make comparisons. So I really enjoy that book quite a bit. I also like a lot of game collections, but my favorite game collection is Karpov's Strategic Wins 1 and 2 is also good. It's just really cool to see how Karpov uses that positional approach to win games. And one of my big takeaways from that was he's still using tactics, right? Still, even undergirding all of his amazing positional maneuvers are tactics. Okay, so those are just some personal favorites that I thought I would throw out there. So as we wrap up today, I want to do kind of a quick, where am I at with my chess right now? And it's been a fascinating, say, last 6 months, because I was in what I felt like, at least, was a really bad stretch. I was really in a rut. I wasn't performing well in my games. My rating dropped like 100 points. That then caused me to really struggle with putting in the work that I need to put in. I was still doing most of it, but the same level of enjoyment wasn't necessarily there. Because it's like, what are we even doing here, right? Like, we're not playing well. And if I'm not playing well, it's just hard to be motivated. So that can be really challenging. But it's just so important to remember that chess improvement really feels so cyclical. And now I'm kind of like on another stretch where I've won a lot of rapid games lately. I've been winning or drawing most of my over-the-board games, very rare losses in like the last month. And it's just suddenly like everything seems to be coming together. But then on top of that, I have no idea if the rating will, right? Ratings are so challenging these days that I'm really trying to just say, if I'm playing well over a month and my rating doesn't go up, oh well, right? Like I don't think I can attach all of my feelings about chess to ratings, even when it's going well, because I've had plenty of tournaments where it's like I go 2-2. The two wins are against really strong juniors who are 400 points underrated. My two losses are to people maybe 100 points higher rated than me. So I'm theoretically supposed to lose. I played a good game. They still won. And that means I'm going to lose like 20 rating points. And I might come out of that tournament being like, I played pretty well, actually. Like, I beat these really good juniors that in a month or two are probably going to be higher rated than me. And I lost to people higher rated than me. I can feel good about that, or at least decent. And then the rating system is like, no, you should not feel good about that. So I don't know where my rating is going to be coming out of this upswing. Will it go up? Will it even go down? I don't know. But it has been a nice run over the last month. But I do want to say that, you know, it's tough for all of you out there who are in that tough spot. Like Noel Studer said recently, the plateaus are the norm. And even the bad times seem to be more normal than the good times. Just remember, it is cyclical. And don't attach everything to rating. Because like I said, even if you're playing good, the rating might not reflect it. It's just the rating system is fundamentally broken right now. And if we can all just accept that and move on with our lives, maybe at some point it will be fixed. But at least in my community, it is not fixed. Hopefully in yours it is. I don't know. Maybe it is. And maybe you have a different experience than I do. So that's going to wrap up this episode. I hope you got something out of just hearing me talk. Next week, we'll have an actual guest. And I hope this is a week where everything goes great for you. And if not, come back next week. We'll have a guest to help you out. See everybody. Have a good one.